former UNLV quarterback Jaden Maiava evaded a question about flipping from Georgia to USC. So if you forgot, Jaden Maiava, quarterback for UNLV last season, he said he was going to come back to UNLV. 7 days later, he was in the transfer portal. He committed to Georgia, and then the next day flipped from Georgia and committed to USC. Maiava got asked after a USC spring practice by the media there what happened between committing to Georgia and then committing to USC, and Maiava said, not really much. It's just I wanted to play under Lincoln Riley.
He probably got promised more chance of playing under Lincoln Riley than he did under Kirby Smart. I don't know if he got promised much at either place, because either place are going to have poor quarterbacks.
So I have not done, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I am some expert on USC football by any means, but the whole conversation about USC football right now is that they've got their quarterback settled.
That was the backup to Caleb Williams.
Yeah. Was it Mason Miller? God, I cannot remember his actual name. But that they've got their quarterback situation settled. Miller Moss, that's what it is. I knew it was double M's. That Miller Moss is the guy. And like, there was a whole story about Caleb Williams being like, I didn't want to play in the bowl game and I wanted to help out Miller Moss so he would get some playing time in the bowl game. And that once he performed well in the bowl game, that other guys transferred saying, oh, this is his team
right
from now on. So I don't even know if Maiava's, if it's even a consideration that Maiava could start for USC. I think this is probably Miller Moss and Maiava's there as the backup in case he gets hurt type situation. So I don't know that he got playing time promise from USC either.
Maiava is going to be a sophomore.
He should have 3 years of eligibility.
Yeah, he should have three years of eligibility. Left. I don't know enough about Moss to tell you what year he is.
I think the problem with that idea, though, is in the world of college football, if like if Miller Moss were to leave after this year, like if he were to go in the portal or he were to go pro, I don't know if he's eligible, but USC would just bring in another quarterback.
Sure. To compete, yeah.
Yeah. The idea of, all right, I got to just wait a year and then I'll be the guy next year because this guy's graduating or something.
I agree with you, but that could be what he's thinking.
Maybe. I think USC just gave him the biggest NIL deal and that's where he went. Like, I think at the end of the day, that's like he flipped in 24 hours from Georgia to USC. I think that just USC somehow was like, wait a minute, you committed to Georgia? Oh, come back over here. Here's what we're giving you.
Right.
And that's why he went to USC, because otherwise, why would you commit to Georgia and then 24 hours later be like, I love this Lincoln Riley guy. I forgot about him.
Right.
Miller Moss is a junior.
All right, so 2 years of eligibility left.
Essentially, if he had a great year, he could leave.
Yeah, he could go pro after this season if he wanted to.
Man, you know, that's a great question.
The Cowboys are not expected to give Dak Prescott an extension, according to Ian Rapoport. That would make Prescott a free agent after this upcoming season. Are the Cowboys actually going to let Dak Prescott hit free agency?
I don't think they are. I think
they'll wait until...
I can't believe they're going to let him walk. I just can't. I cannot believe that. I mean... No, I don't think so. I think they're going to sign him.
I think they wait until after the season, but re-sign him before free agency opens.
Why wait?
Well... Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because if they are going to sign him and they know he's long-term... Jarrett said he's going to make a Super Bowl quarterback. So if he's a Super Bowl quarterback, then why aren't you signing him?
Like, they could have given him a new deal, reduced his cap hit for this season, and actually signed a free agent. They signed anybody besides Trent Sieg, the long snapper? Like, they could have actually signed somebody in free agency by reducing his cap hit with an extension. But if they let him play it out and then give him a new deal... The cap hits $55 million or whatever it is, and it doesn't change. Now, in theory, next year's cap hit could be really low, because when you sign the new deal, you can push the money around and be like, all right, we're paying him $70 million. His cap hits $6 million or something like that, because the NFL is great. But I don't understand not giving him the extension now. Is there anything he's going to do this season that makes them say, oh, yes, he's so much better now, we got to keep him? Like,
no.
What he is.
Well,
like, in my mind, it can only get worse for the Cowboys.
Yes. I know exactly where you're going.
Like, if they actually win a playoff game. Imagine if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott's the highest paid player in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
If the Cowboys get bounced in the first round, Dak Prescott probably comes in as, like, you know, top five quarterback deal or something like that. But, like, I don't think, I guess he could get hurt. And then it's, all right, what do we sign him to? But Kirk Cousins just got a big deal coming off an Achilles injury.
Oh, man, $100 million guaranteed.
I can't, like, I just can't imagine that it gets cheaper for the Cowboys by waiting. So I'm confused as to what they're doing. Because the other side of this is if they let him hit free agency, the Raiders might, Antonio Pierce might try to give Dak Prescott his house.
Right.
He might try to get, right. He might say, hey, you can own the practice facility.
Yes.
We'll pay you rent to play here to get a quarterback as good as Dak Prescott. So, like, if he were to hit free agency, yeah. Like, there's going to be, we're talking about teams that need quarterbacks this year.
Lining up for him.
Yeah. The guy's good. So, I'm kind of confused by what the Cowboys are doing here.
I'm out.
Quick side note, maybe Trey Lance is awesome, and they know it, and they're going to let Dak walk, and they're going to be like, all right, Trey Lance, here's you and your $5 million contract. Time to make it happen. Jim Harbaugh has been living in an RV. Harbaugh told MLive, it's been great just being myself. I always wanted to do that. It worked out great. I'm 100 feet from Greg Roman, who has a really, really good RV. Greg Roman is now his offensive coordinator with the Chargers. So the head coach and the offensive coordinator of the Chargers are living in RVs next to each other?
That's awesome. Great.
What is going on?
No, it's awesome. Great. They can.
They're committed. They're committed to turning the Chargers around into a real winner.
They can go wherever they want. They can take their home with them. It's great.
Where are they going?
Anywhere. They could go to the beach. They could go to the practice facility.
Neither one of them drove to the meetings in Florida. They got on planes to do that.
Yeah.
What's the point of the RV if you're flying somewhere?
You're at the facility the whole time, Tyler. You're sleeping. That's the cliche.
Just put a bed in the facility then.
They sleep at the facility. They're that committed.
Is he going to have, like, coaching staff meetings in his RV?
Well, he's moving into a house this week.
Or maybe next week. That's a bad move.
Because part of the thing is his family still hasn't moved from Michigan yet.
Yeah.
They're moving this week or next week. I can't remember the exact detail.
Well, the family's not moving into the RV.
Exactly. They're moving into the house that they're renting or buying for the year. So his family's coming and he'll be out of the RV. But for weeks, maybe a month or so, he's been living
in an RV.
Danny, you don't get to answer this because I know your answer would probably agree with this. Ed, Harbaugh said, I've always wanted to do that about living in an RV. Have you ever wanted to live in an RV?
No.
Have you ever wanted to be in an RV?
Have you seen me drive? Can you imagine how many cars I would take out? Can you imagine putting me behind the wheel of an RV? Are you serious? I wouldn't get out of the parking lot. I mean, I don't know who brought it in for him. Maybe Harbaugh's a great driver. I don't know who brought it in. I guarantee someone brought it in for him. He didn't drive it in. No chance.
I know Danny's dream life is probably to drive an RV across the country to different rivers or something and go fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I know that's Danny over here, that's like the goal is to get the RV to be able to drive around. But
could you drive one without crashing?
I'm sure I could. It would obviously take some getting used to. I've never driven one before, but I'm sure, give me 30 minutes behind the wheel, I can get used to it.
You could. I drove one when I was like 20.
No, did you hit anything?
No. Got flipped off by a semi-truck driver, though, so that was fun.
You were going slow?
It was very hilly wherever we were, and his cruise control did not work. Mine was in an RV. Mine didn't work that well either, but every time we'd go up a hill, he'd slow down by like 15 miles an hour.
Right.
And I'd go past him a little bit, but then we'd go down the hill, and he was flying.
Flying.
And he'd go past me, and he flipped me off because we did that for like 5 minutes. And he really wanted me to pass him or get behind him. But, yeah, so he didn't like that.
Yeah, I would do that for a whole summer. That'd be great.
It's not great. I'd
give you credit for being able to drive it.
It's not that hard. I never had to, like, reverse it or anything. I just pulled out of the parking lot, got on the highway, and pulled into a parking lot somewhere else. Put that thing in reverse, no chance.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, again, great question.
Jordan Montgomery signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Darn it.
Two days before the season starts. Wait, you worried about the Diamondbacks again?
Yes, had to come into the division.
I'm so worried about this. So Montgomery's deal, he's got 1 year for $25 million this year, and then there's a potential year two. If he makes 10 starts this season, he'll get a second year worth $20 million. That can go up to $25 million if he makes 18 starts. So this is probably a two-year deal worth $45 to $50 million for Jordan Montgomery. Scott Boras. Yikes.
Yeah, I'm wondering, and Boras didn't do well for his guys, but did Boras just bang his head against the wall because he just couldn't get long-term deals? Like, teams just wouldn't give it to him no matter, you know, who they were? I mean, I don't know how teams like dealing with Scott Boras. I would think he would drive them insane.
I think it was the Giants general manager wanted to know if he gets an award for negotiating two contracts with Boras this offseason because they signed Chapman and Snell. Ultimately, you had Snell, Chapman, Montgomery, Bellinger. And Bellinger. Four outside of, you know, Otani and Yamamoto, four of the biggest free agents this offseason.
Right.
And none of them got a good deal.
Right.
They all ended up signing the short term, I can opt out after year one, or I could get a player option if I perform well type of deal. I mean, I think some of this is on like the owners and teams being like, we don't really want to commit 7 years to Blake Snell type situation. But I still have to imagine Boras could have done a lot better for his clients than he actually did, because they all might be on the market again next year.
Yeah.
And who's going to want him? Is it going to be significantly different next offseason? Or teams going to say, oh, now we want Bellinger.
Right.
Now we want to give Snell 7 years. I doubt it.
No.
So
unless they go absolutely crazy.
I mean,
even then,
Snell won the Cy Young and couldn't get it. So what's he got? He's going to win another Cy Young and they say, okay, now we believe you. I don't think so. I mean, I guess Bellinger could win the MVP
again.
But he's not that good, so we'll see. But brutal offseason for Scott Boras and Jordan Montgomery. I did not see an update. I assume he was keeping himself ready, but I don't know how close he is to being able to pitch in a major league game since the season starts tomorrow.
Next question.
John Calipari will return to Kentucky. He met with the athletic director. The athletic director of Kentucky actually sent out a tweet last night.
Yeah, did you see that? Mitch Barnhart?
I mean, like, we always talk at the end of the season, and we're excited for more of John Calipari.
Yeah.
Do you think that conversation simply went, John, we don't have $33 million to fire you, so welcome back.
What a buyout. $33 million.
Well, when they gave him the new contract, they described it as a lifetime contract.
Right.
When it's not, but that's how they described it, because they were like, we love it. We're never going to regret this.
I think as he walked off the court after the Oakland game, someone was regretting it.
Yeah, no, they regret it because it's like, oh, we haven't done anything. We're Kentucky. We should be going to the final
to the second round.
Yeah, well, that. We should go to the second round, and they can't even do that. They're not very good. That's a problem there. Coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we are going to get into the NFL.
Russell has those resources, man, that structure. And so that's why I say he has pole position, man. It just creates a synergy that I think is good for this time of year. When it's time to compete, we get in training camp-like settings, and obviously Justin will be given an opportunity to show his capabilities.
You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff.
We're giving away $2,024 every day, but it ends at the end of this week. So you got three more days. Text line is 702-364-1100 to get entered to win. All you got to do is text us today's code word. Today's word is Dune. D-U-N-E. Text Dune to 702-364-1100. You do that, you're in it to win $2,024. That was Mike Tomlin. Why do you think Tomlin is afraid to say Russell Wilson is the starter? Like, what's this pole position crap?
I like the pole position line.
Do you think he came up with that before, like ahead of time, was like, how do I answer these questions? Oh, I know what. I'm going to say pole position.
Sure, he knew what the questions were going to be. I mean, that was what else did he ask this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, you're only going to talk about the quarterbacks. You only care about the quarterbacks. So I'm sure he was walking over there thinking, what nice thing or what in creative, interesting thing can I call this? Oh, I'll call it a pole position.
What'd you name him the starter?
Maybe he just hates the phrase QB1.
Well, I don't know why name him the starter, but they've told him he's the starter.
Right. Like, yeah, what are we doing here?
Exactly.
I don't know. Are we going to have – is he going to give us, like, race updates through camp?
Give Justin Fields some confidence?
It's going to be like the first week of camp, and he's like, well, Russ started on the pole, and he's extended his lead. He's through turn three. And
no pit stop for Russ.
Justin Fields spun out on the first turn or something. Like, are we going to get up there? It's going to be like, ah, Justin Fields, he's going to overtake him pretty soon.
Is the
first off the line.
Yeah.
Is the quarterback coach driving the pace car?
he's got to commit to this. You go with pole position. We got to commit to it through the entire season as to who the actual quarterback is for the Steelers. All right. The NFL has changed the kickoff rule. It is going to look like the XFL kickoff. If you're unaware of what that is, no more running starts. Everybody's going to be within 10 yards of each other at the kickoff, except the kicker and the return man. So 10 each for each team will be within 10 yards of each other. Kicker will kick it, return man will catch it, and then everybody else can move. Do you like the rule change?
I covered a couple. What were the Vipers?
Yeah. The Las Viper Vegas game. Vipers.
Yeah. It was fine. I'm not going to go head over heels either way, and it's fine. I mean, I know why they're doing it on the risk of injury. They're trying to do that in a lot of different ways. I don't know if I like the hip tackle yesterday. I don't know how much I agree with that one because it's going to be so difficult for guys going 100 miles an hour not to tackle guys certain ways. But I don't mind it. I think it's fine. You don't like kickers to begin with.
Yeah, special teams is stupid.
So you don't probably like either one, like the old one. Like I heard Bob Stoops on the radio yesterday saying the old one didn't matter because it just went out of the end zone anyway most
right.
of the time.
Because they changed the touchback rule to where basically everything can be a touchback, yeah, exactly. Even if the ball doesn't get to the end zone.
Yeah.
Everything was a touchback last year. Yeah. It was 21% of kickoffs were actually returned last year, which is the lowest rate in the history of the NFL. So we basically last year had a pointless play. Completely pointless. There was no reason to ever pay attention to the kickoff. It did not matter at all. So I'm on board with them changing it to try to make it at least an interesting play again where, hey, you could have a return. Now, what's going to stop kickers from kicking it through the end zone still?
Nothing.
They can still do that if they want. But in theory, there should be more returns this season, which gives us a little bit more action. I don't have a hot take on it either way because it's special teams and...
You don't like special teams.
Yeah, we don't really need it. This kickoff, the old kickoff from, 2010 to 2020 and what they did last year, I could do without all of it. We could just line up and put the ball in the 25 and say, here's the ball for the other team. That's fine. The one thing I don't like, which also doesn't really matter given the other rule changes they've made, you can't onside kick until the fourth quarter.
Right, until the fourth quarter.
And you have to declare it because you have to line up differently.
No surprise onside kicks anymore. You have to open a game.
You have to declare your onside kicking because you line up differently, and you can't do it until the fourth quarter, and you can only do it twice. Now, I know the odds of a team recovering like three onside kicks in a game is basically zero. Nobody can. They changed the rules on that to where you have to have an even amount of number of players on both sides of the ball, so you can't overload one side and go get the onside kick. So there, nobody recovers onside kicks anymore. But I hate the – why can I only do two? If I'm down four touchdowns in the fourth quarter, why can't I just onside kick every time I score? I don't understand that. Why can't I onside kick every time after every possession? Imagine if I had a kicker who just – he found a way to do it. He could every single time have a kick.
Bounce a certain way that you're going
to
get the onside kick.
That you have a really good chance to get it. Right. Why would I not be allowed to do that whenever I want it? Why would I don't understand the point of, hey, you can only onside kick in the fourth quarter. That onside kicks are more exciting than regular kickoffs.
They're overthinking the room.
Yeah, I'd much rather see that every single time.
Well, yeah, because like you said, these guys have such powerful legs. Like if you're Daniel Carlson, you just kick it out of the end zone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
So I don't like the onside kick part of this as well. What I did find interesting, Albert Breer reported this. Three teams in the NFL voted against the new kickoff. The Packers, the 49ers, and our Las Vegas Raiders.
So Antonio Pierce probably likes the old-time one where it was just a regular return and you just blew people up because that's the Raider way.
I believe this is owner votes, not coach votes.
I mean, I can't believe Mark Davis didn't ask his coach.
That's probably a good point.
I mean, he didn't call Antonio up and say, what do you want to do here? What do you think?
What do you think the reason is?
That they wanted the old one where you can just down it?
I mean, they voted against the new rule, so presumably the Packers, Niners, and Raiders would have just preferred they do what they did last year, where everything is basically a touchback.
I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't like it. I have no idea.
I don't either. Like,
what's the point?
Of the three options, what they did last year is clearly the least entertaining. Of the three options,
yes.
Right, the old kickoff rules where it was sort of a normal kickoff and everything, where you couldn't have a touchback unless it went in the end zone, that was more entertaining than what they did last year, and then what we're going to do this upcoming season is going to be more entertaining than what they did last year. So I don't understand why you would vote against this to just go back to what we did last year, because that was – unless they're like, yeah, we just want to get rid of the kickoff altogether, so let's just stick with the thing that sucks the most, so eventually we just ban it completely. But I don't think Mark Davis is out here trying to get rid of the kickoff entirely. So I don't know why they voted against it.
With this new kickoff rule, it also moves touchbacks to the 30 instead of the 25.
Oh, it does. I did not know that. So you're less incentivized for a touchback.
Yeah,
I'm still taking the touchback. Somebody returns one for 40 yards on me once. Yeah, I'm taking the touchback. I don't care. Put it at the 30. It's 5 more yards. Who cares?
Yeah, that was that the same rule in the UFL last year?
In the XFL? XFL
went to the 30?
I don't remember, because I don't think I ever saw one. I think they penalized kickoffs much more.
For touchbacks?
I think so.
They threw a penalty flag?
Like, hold on. I'll look up the exact rules, because I know XFL's kickoff rules were way different than what they're actually making.
Yeah, it's not exactly the same. It's just sort of based off of what
the lineup is the same, but the rules are a little different. I'll see what the actual kick
penalized
touchback.
For a touchback would be funny. You're too strong. You're too strong of a kicker.
Daniel, a stop here. Doing that.
So, new kickoff rule. We'll see how much that actually impacts anything. I'm sure we'll get a little bit more excitement, but here's my problem with it. Ultimately, on kickoffs, is this going to give us more big returns? Are we going to get more kickoff touchdowns, or even just 40, 50 yard returns, a guy gets caught or whatever? Or is this just simply going to result in more returns? They get the ball to the 27 or the 29 or the 33. Like, are we just going to get a little bit of action to put the ball at the 30 yard line?
I think it's more the latter.
I do too. Like,
I don't know if we're getting a lot of 100-yard returns.
If we get into the season and we're getting, you know, like once a game, every other game, somebody's ripping off a big return, then okay. Like, that's exciting. If we're just saying, hey, we're going to have a little bit of action and the ball's going to end up at the 30-yard line every time anyways.
Right.
What's the point? Like, nobody's truly like, I got to see the kickoff.
Right.
Like, it's better than touchbacks as far as entertainment goes, but it's not like, oh, I got to see this type of play. So that, I think, will be my main curiosity is, do we actually get real
returns.
Big returns?
Right.
Or is this just a way to get 30 yards?
So in the XFL, if you kick it through the end zone, the ball is placed at the 35.
Okay.
So not much more, but an extra 5 yards.
Man, if the kickoffs still suck, we're gonna start putting the ball at the 50 on touchbacks.
But they also do. They also have a rule that on the kickoff, if the ball hits inside the 20 and is downed in the end zone, the ball is placed at the 15. So
to
even though
you to catch it, and actually,
it encourages you to do a return.
All right, we'll see if there's any good returns coming up next. Jason Fitz joins the show.
Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is the Press Box with Graney and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
Joining us now from Yahoo Sports, it's Jason Fitz. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Good morning. How about that UNLV game?
Yeah.
Let's go.
When do they play again, Jason?
They play, tonight, tomorrow night? Seton Hall, I know they play next. I haven't looked at the calendar yet. It's a confusing time, but I'll watch it against Seton Hall. By the way, Big East basketball, a little underrated this year. Guys can shoot from everywhere, play good defense. That's good. That's a tough matchup, Seton Hall.
Are you giving us a breakdown on Seton Hall basketball for the NIT?
Yeah, just for you. Just for you.
Tonight, buddy.
Fun.
It's tonight.
Yeah, it's tonight.
Tonight to watch it.
Don't forget.
I won't forget. I mean, look at all this. By the way, openly shilling UNLV, like, you know, feel free to send me some stuff. Like, I'll put on some jerseys, post some posts there. Like, send me a little NIT championship banner. I'll hang it in my house.
Hold on. I got to ask you another question. I assume you can answer this. Can you name a player on UNLV?
No, God, no. No, I mean, right now, I mean, does Stacey Ogman and Larry Johnson count? No, actually, I was having this long. That's a great question by you. I was having a long conversation with Danny Green about this very thing, about the fact that, like, I wish that we had more stars that wanted to play at UNLV. And so then we decided we, in fairness, would have a can you name anybody other than Thomas was the challenge. And the answer came across the board. We were all like, no, I think we had to kind of look it up. I'm going to be honest with you. We had to look it all up. So, little struggle there. But, you know, that's modern college basketball. I mean, come on, how many guys can we really name on any of these teams? Let's go.
There's two guys that are twins, so you just need one last name to get two and three in Caleb and Keelan Boone. So next time somebody asks you, Boone twins, and you're good to go.
Look at that. Yeah. Look at God. I got one. I could have had three if I just had one more name.
All right.
The odds were not in my favor.
I want to ask you, because Antonio Pierce talked to the media again, which is always great for sports radio. Is the Magician a good nickname for Tom Telesco?
I like it, but I also think that it's kind of funny. It speaks to the fact that from the outset, they are being very clear at who's responsible for what, which means eventually, if things go great, that's beautiful. If things don't, whose fault is what, it becomes a very real conversation. Like, so often we've sat here and looked at these regimes and said, yeah, but how much control do coach have and who gets blamed for this or that? If the talent that plays for the Raiders is not good enough, Antonio Pierce, intentionally or unintentionally, has done a beautiful job of making sure the world knows that his job is to coach the people to come in the door, not to pick those people. So up and down the board, if Josh Jacobs has a massive season this year for Green Bay, you know, and it turns out that the running game's a problem for the Raiders, Antonio Pierce has really protected himself in that conversation. Same with the quarterbacks, same with the roster as a whole. Smart move, intentional or not.
He keeps talking about a quarterback. He never stops in terms of the quarterback he wants and how he wants to move up and all of that. Should we just assume as we get closer they're staying where they're at and taking an offensive tackle?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, and I did that. We did a mock draft on Monday with Yahoo, and I was with Nate Tice, who does really good draft breakdowns. By the way, I would beg everybody to go watch the Nate Tice breakdown on J.J. McCarthy, because he flat out shows you the clips that show McCarthy struggles throwing left that everybody continues to just ignore. It's a really smart piece. But I would say this, the board came to me, and I had the choice between Fulaga, Michael Penix Jr., or Bo Nix at 13. All three were available to me, and I went Fulaga. And I just think, I understand everybody wants a quarterback, but if I have the chance at a plug-and-play offensive lineman and I'm not sure I'm one of the quarterbacks, I take a plug-and-play offensive lineman all day, and then if I love one of the quarterbacks, I try to trade back into the first league.
I don't know if Antonio Pierce is actually plotting out this far in advance, but you saying the idea of, like, where it's very clear whose role is what between Telesco and Pierce. Is there a chance we get 2 years into this and the Raiders maybe haven't won very much and Pierce says, well, Telesco didn't get me a quarterback. You got to let me give a couple years with an actual quarterback in place, and he never got one, so fire that guy and keep me around.
100%. I mean, also, like, what do players always, like, true great players always tell you, do your job. Do your job. You know, and true great players also that you talk to that played in the league will tell you in a non-condescending way that we hear this phrase so often, know your role. So, like, know exactly what you're supposed to do and do your job. And I think that that is absolutely who Antonio Pierce is as a coach so far. He knows exactly what he's responsible for. He's going to do his job. But there's absolutely no reason not to think that the way he handles things so bluntly, that if people come in and say, well, you only won five games, they'll look at it and say, okay, well, we never got a quarterback and we're taking on Mahomes. What did you guys expect? Like, I can honestly see, and I don't think that that's throwing anybody under the bus. I think Antonio Pierce has proven himself to be a blunt communicator. So just like, you know, Harbaugh can sit there and say, McCarthy's the best quarterback in the draft because there's absolutely no recourse to it. He doesn't have to take him. Pierce can sit here all day long and say, I want to move up and take the quarterback. Because even if that's impossible, that's not his problem. Like, that's Telesco's problem. So he's only going to deal with exactly what his job is, which is coaching the guys in the room. And he's going to be blunt if it's not going well about whether or not he didn't think he got the right players.
Are you glad that Telesco appears to have all the power?
I think that it's important to have Telesco because of his look. I mean, number one, let's the free agent signings aside, the money guaranteed aside, the Chargers have done a pretty good job of drafting for a long time. But also, I do think that it's important to have somebody that understands the long term, the short term, and has been there before. Like, I like that experience, you know, in any industry. Like, the first radio show I ever did in Nashville on the mornings, my co-host had done radio for a long time. I needed that. Like, even though I was lucky enough to advance substantially quickly, like, I needed somebody that knew exactly how local radio worked that really helped me. And my first national radio show was with Sarah Spain, who'd done radio for years. Like, I needed that. My first job as a true band leader that was in charge of a band, I was surrounded by management people that had done it for years, and I needed that. Like, I think that experience is something we undervalue at that role. So I love having somebody in the room that can look at Pierce and say, I know you want a quarterback, and I know you think we have to go get one, but here's X, Y, and Z that we have to factor in and let there be a little bit of checks and balances.
Why do you hate Purdue?
I don't hate Purdue. I just think Purdue's wildly overrated. Look, I don't like one-trick ponies. And, you know, Zach Edey, by the way, has definitely gotten better. I don't want to take anything away from the fact that the big boy's gotten better. But they're a one-trick pony. If Edey has a Edey, if that's a great nickname. I should have come with that. If
Edey
has a bad game, they don't have a second answer. They've got a couple of guys that are okay shooters, but they're hot and cold. The same reason that I don't like Tennessee in this tournament, because if Dalton Kinect really has a poor game, just like he did in the SEC tournament, they got slaughtered. Now, he had a poor first half in the tournament, and they survived it, but I don't trust anybody that, you know, you tell me that a coach has had almost a week to get ready for Edey. I think that there's a bit of a game plan. And, I mean, I watched Michigan State almost beat them twice this year. When I watched those games, both times they were like, hey, we'll let Edey get his double-double 26 and 12, but we're going to force everybody else to beat us. And those were ugly, low-scoring games that, you know, Michigan State almost won. And Michigan State's not a particularly good basketball team. So when Purdue takes on a truly good basketball team with a decent coach, I think they're fried.
They're going to win the national championship. They're also going to play Tennessee to go to the Final Four. So one of those teams you don't think is any good is going to be in the Final Four.
Yeah, well, I mean, the bracket laying out the way the bracket lays out doesn't make you good. I mean, let's be real. Like, the times that we've seen Cinderella get to the final, or Sweet 16 at least, and we're like, oh, that team's not any good. Boy, is that a cute story. And also, I'm not willing to bet that Tennessee beats Creighton. Creighton is a better basketball team than they're getting credit for. So, you know, I thought Creighton was underseeded as a three. So I'd take Creighton over Tennessee.
Yeah, Creighton lost to UNLV. They're a bunch of bums.
No. I mean, that's, you know, Creighton's a bit streaky, but they at least got four or five guys that can shoot from the outside as opposed to one guy. Like, the offense, there was a game, about a month ago at this point where Dalton Kinect had more points than the opponent in the half, and the rest of Tennessee was 3-20 shooting. Like, you can't tell me that you can win a tournament when everybody on your team not named Dalton Kinect goes 3-20.
All right. The one thing I wanted to ask you, too, what do you think of Shohei Ohtani right now?
I think this is all absolutely wildly fraudulent. And the most important part about this is, like, look, you can't change what's now been created in the minds of conspiracy theorists and doubters. So, like, the only way baseball gets through this is if they're wildly transparent, which baseball has never proven themselves to be. And so now we have this situation where Shohei comes out and gives us a truly non-believable story. Like, it's difficult for anyone. I won't say it's impossible for someone to take $4.5 million out of a rich person's account. I will honestly say I know some musicians that have an assistant that essentially runs their accounts and they never look. It's more possible than we think. But to wire $500,000 that many times, somebody is notifying Ohtani somewhere and somebody is having to sign off on that. So it's just not believable. But the problem is, now, even if he comes out and says, I didn't do anything, and baseball says, we investigated it, and he didn't do anything, nobody's going to believe him. So what do you do with the fact that the perception has been created? Nothing changes that, and that's the unfortunate part about this. Like, for the rest of time, when Shohei Ohtani is hopefully eventually going into the Hall of Fame conversation, even if he's innocent, people are going to say, yeah, but was he innocent? That's the biggest, like, Yahoo had meetings that I sat in on, how can we cover the Dodgers and Ohtani better coming into the season, because it was supposed to be one of the single biggest stories in baseball history in modern baseball. And instead, we're spending all this time not talking about opening day, but talking about the possibility that Ohtani bet on or against himself and his team over the course of the last several years. It's disgusting for the sport.
So you don't think, as we surmised earlier in the week, that he's an idiot?
No, I don't think he's an idiot. I think even an idiot can't be that stupid. Like, it's very rare, you know, when you see the stories of musicians that blew all their money, most of them at some point had at least a hand in it. You know, like, it's just, it's hard to be that level. $4.5 million out of your account, that's a hard level of stupid to hit. It feels to me much more like a gambling addiction. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus without all the evidence. I don't want to accuse him of anything. It's just, the story isn't believable. And if that is your story, and you have to know as a group it's not believable, you better come with receipts. If you're asking everybody to believe that it just happened to happen that way, you better have receipts. So I don't think this is going to end well at all, especially because even if baseball wants to push it under the rug, that doesn't mean the IRS or, you know, the Homeland Security or the FBI, they're all going to have to investigate it, and baseball's not going to stop them from finding what they find.
If you needed $4.5 million, who in your phone contacts are you calling?
If I needed $4.5, like, am I in trouble and I need a friend to bail me out, or am I looking for a stupid friend I can take it from?
Let's do the stupid friend you can take it from. I like that. I like that opportunity better.
I'm not gonna say he's stupid, because that's a hard way to say it.
You just did.
But if there's anybody that I think that would be distracted enough to let me at least yank part of $4.5 million, it'd be Richie Sambora. Richie's got too much going on in life, and, like, he's just sort of a scattered 80s rock star that no longer really, like, you know, one day he's just, like, wildly in it, and the next day he's just not paying attention to anything. One day he's flying to go meet a friend, and the next day he's in the studio for 24 hours. Like, I could see Richie so ADHD. I could see, like, Richie just being absolutely flabbergasted when he finds out that I got, you know, maybe $450K out of him. I don't think I can get $4.5 million, but that's the closest.
Well, he is Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports. Jason, as always, we appreciate
Thanks, buddy.
It.
I appreciate it. I'm going to go see if I can take some money from Richie now.
Yeah.
So, Jason Fitz about to commit his own wire fraud against his rich friend. Coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we'll get more into the Shohei Ohtani gambling scandal.
And there are still a lot of questions that I and a lot of other people would like to see answered. Namely, how did Ipe have access to these bank accounts? How was he making these payments without Shohei knowing about them? These are all reasonable questions that in due time, I am hoping that we get answers to. But for what that was about as good as it could have been. Now, is it the truth? It's hard to know with 100% certainty that it's the truth, or 75% of the truth, or 50% of the truth.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Ed. Dodger fan Ed Graney, who actually kind of thinks Ohtani should be suspended. Do you believe Ohtani? What do you think happened? I don't think we've actually, between the two of us, said what we think happened between Ohtani, his interpreter, and the illegal sports game, bookie.
I think it's important to remember they were like almost best friends. They were that close to each other because obviously he was with them all the time as an interpreter. I don't think there's any way he didn't know that things were going on or that his best friend was a gambler. Like, just in casual conversation, you have to say, oh, I bet this, or I like this, or whatever. I mean, I would think if he was this much of a degenerate, then I can't believe that all they talked about was like, hey, what do you want to eat?
Then he'd be showing Ohtani, hey, I got Alabama minus 17 and a half.
I mean, I cannot believe Shohei Ohtani didn't know about this.
Yeah.
I just can't.
I know bets my friends have placed for like $5, $20. Danny comes on here and tells us things he's betting, and they're, you know, for $10.
In the break, Danny had the UNLV line go from 5.5 to 6.5 around town.
So I just, like, if they actually were, I guess there's a chance they weren't best friends, that's a misrepresentation of their relationship. I don't know. But I do kind of agree with you that if they were as close as we've been led to believe, regardless of the losing and the debt and all of that, I have to imagine Ipe would be bringing up, like, Shohei would be walking somewhere and he'd be like, why are you watching South Carolina, North Carolina football? And he's like, oh, I got North Carolina minus 6.5. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of agree with you. Here's my other question on this. Why is Ipe Mizuhara, the translator, okay with taking all the blame now?
Taking the fall for him.
Because here's the timeline of different stories we got. Mizuhara told ESPN that he was the one who did all the gambling, but Ohtani agreed to pay it off. He told ESPN that Ohtani sent
the
wire transfers, that Ohtani knew about it and helped him.
That was the first story.
And then Mizuhara and Ohtani's team, but Mizuhara himself told ESPN the next day, he lied. None of that was true. Ohtani knew nothing about it. He stole the money from Ohtani. I can't figure out why Ipe Mizuhara would do that. Why would he go through the trouble of this 90-minute interview and lie to ESPN and say that, yes, I am in gambling debt. Yes, it was with an illegal bookie, and Ohtani helped me. And then the very next day, take that story away and say, no, it was all me. Because in that theory, Mizuhara just went from he placed bets with an illegal bookie, which is illegal, to now he placed bets with an illegal bookie and he stole money from his friend.
And
he stole $4.5 million. Dollars. So he is now, he went from admitting to one crime to admitting to two crimes. And Ohtani's side of the story, they want us to believe that Ohtani knew nothing and that Mizuhara did all of this on his own. Why on earth would Mizuhara, the next day, after lying about it for 90 minutes, the very next day, admit to it? That part makes no sense at all, why Mizuhara would do that.
Wink, wink, someone got to him.
That's
Someone got to him.
That's what makes sense to me. So ultimately, here's what I think happened. I think Mizuhara's very first story to ESPN is the closest to the truth that we've gotten so far. I think that is most likely the most truthful account. I'm sure there were some lies or things not told in there, but I think the most likely outcome here is that Ipe Mizuhara was gambling illegally. How he racked up $4.5 million might be a question, but he was the one doing the gambling. Ohtani agreed in some form to help him and pay it off. Some of it, all of it, whatever it was, Ohtani knew about it and agreed to pay it off. And then once Mizuhara talked to ESPN to try to like tell the story, he says that Ohtani knew it, and then all of a sudden they realized, uh-oh, Ohtani could be in trouble if he paid off an illegal bookie. We've got to change this story. Now we're going to say he knew nothing at all.
Right.
And it was all the translator. That's what I think happened, because that makes the most sense. Everything else, there's too many questions about how or why or motivations or anything else. So I think the most likely truthful story is the very first story Mizuhara told.
Yeah, he sat down with them for 90 minutes. And I agree with you, because the lie makes more sense that it's the next day. That of what he said the next day, that no, he had nothing to do with it. That makes more sense to me being a lie than it was my fault. I gambled all the money. He just wanted to help me out as a friend.
Yeah.
And if they were as close as everyone says they were, and with as much money as Ohtani has, I could see Ohtani helping him out.
Yeah. Ohtani helps him out, and you go from there. So see what happens. I don't know if we'll get significant details. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say, because from Mizuhara's side, we'll ask Ash this when we talk to Ash next hour. I imagine the punishment from like the government for illegally gambling is going to be kind of insignificant, like a fine. I doubt he goes to prison for illegally placing bets. They want the bookie, not the people placing the bets. But the punishment for stealing $4.5 million and committing wire fraud is, I'm assuming, significantly more
than making the bets.
Right. So why would he admit to that? Again, we'll ask Ash what the actual punishment is for those two things, because it doesn't make sense for Mizuhara to lie one day and then the next day be like, I give up on this lie already.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to turn myself in, and I'm going to be the guy who goes on the sword for Ohtani. I think Ohtani probably knew about this, and they've got to pretend like he didn't.